Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Hi, I'm Ariana Maddox. You probably know me from TV, or maybe you read my best-selling book and tried one of my amazing cocktails, or maybe you saw me on Broadway. What I can say is following dreams is kind of my thing, but of all the things I'm lucky enough to get to do, the thing that I get asked about the most are my shoes. What's my secret? DSW. DSW is the best place to get all the shoes you need from brands you love. Trust me, I'm obsessed. In fact, I love DSW so much, I've teamed up with them to create a collection of shoes from must-have sandals to super cool sneakers that are guaranteed to get compliments. Because if I've learned anything, it's that if you've got big dreams to follow, you're gonna need some really great shoes. Find the shoes of your dreams when you shop my new collection now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nutrition Diva podcast, a show where we take a closer look at the latest research, trends, and headlines to help you make more informed decisions about your own health and nutrition. I'm your host, Monica Reinagle, and today we're talking about the concept of food noise, a term that's become a bit of a buzzword lately. We're going to explore what this term means, how it relates to our overall health, our weight management, and maybe even some ways to turn down the volume. Joining me to talk about all of this is Dr. Nina Crowley. Nina is a registered dietitian nutritionist, as well as a doctor of psychology. She's affectionately known to her friends and colleagues as the psycho dietitian. Nina has years of experience working in the field of bariatrics, as well as an educator and advocate against weight stigma and bias. And a lot of that is rooted in mistaken beliefs and erroneous thinking about the nature of this disease. And we're going to get into all of that today. Welcome to the podcast, Nina.
Thanks, Monica. I'm so excited to be here with you.
There's been so much talk over the past couple of years about these new weight loss medications, the GLP-1 agonists, which have really revolutionized both the treatment options for obesity and our understanding of this disease condition and other related medical conditions. And Wegovy and Ozempic are the brand names that have gotten the most airtime, but there are a whole class of drugs in this category, and there are more coming in the pipeline. And I have talked about these medications on the podcast before, but today I'm hoping that you can shed some light on a particular aspect of this. Patients are reporting that part of their experience on these medications includes a notable decrease in the amount of food noise in their heads. And I think this term food noise has really captured the public imagination. I looked it up on Google Trends, and searches for this term, food noise, over the last year were triple what they were, even just in 2021. And in 2004, there were no searches for that term. But I'm not sure that we're all using this term in the same way. And when obesity researchers use this term, they are talking about something much more intense than, for example, you know, hearing the ice cream calling to us from the freezer.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think it's such an interesting time with the medications being around. But as someone who's been working with patients who've had bariatric surgery for many years, I think that's also been a really common phenomenon that we just really didn't have a word for. So part of me is really happy to have a term that we can all, you know, kind of put some structure to, put some guardrails around, and you know, give people a name to call something that they've been experiencing. And yeah, it's pretty intrusive and problematic for folks. So I think, you know, there's a couple different definitions out there, but I do think, you know, really referring to the constant and intrusive thoughts that people have about food that are disruptive to their daily life and that really make the healthful behaviors difficult. I like that definition. I think, you know, as I've been thinking about it, we think a lot about the timing content, the intensity, and the impact. And so, you know, if you'd like, I'd love to go through and kind of talk about those four areas and how that relates.
That would be very useful. So four dimensions of food noise that can maybe tip it over from an occasional urge or craving to something that's really getting in the way of life. So what were they again?
So timing, content, intensity, and impact. So timing is sort of this thinking about food all the time, and it's really considered relentless, constant, pervasive, persistent, incessant, even this rumination that people have, or an obsessive preoccupation with food. So this is something that is not just, you know, oh yeah, I'd love to have a burger. That sounds really good right now. And right. I think the timing piece is huge. The content is what we're thinking about, right? So, you know, they would say, you're not really thinking about, you know, broccoli obsessively or, you know, constantly, but it's typically these sort of tasty, tempting, highly palatable foods, foods that we desire, foods that we crave. And then the intensity is, it's again, really not that, oh yeah, what should I take out for dinner? These are, you know, difficult to suppress. They're excessive. You're hyperfixating on foods. And this is where medication or even surgery has that impact where it takes the intensity down, not away, but quieting the noise. So I really do like the concept of noise because there's such a range of intensity there. And then impact is where we take this out of just being something that we're experiencing and giving it that, you know, is it good? Is it bad? It has a lot to do with that impact. So this is where these thoughts are unwelcome. They make it difficult to stick to your plans. They contribute to overeating in maladaptive eating behaviors. Sometimes we call that emotional eating. And they're also often associated with people living with obesity, having more of this than others. So some people who don't have it, you know, really don't understand it. And I think that there's a real overlay with bias and stigma, even in this area, in already, you know, people living with obesity experience a lot of bias and stigma. People taking medications experience a lot of stigma. And so even kind of talking about this concept, I can see where people can put their value judgments on it if you're experiencing it or not.
Actually, I wonder if the popularization of this term also runs the risk of trivializing it, you know? So, and I'm reminded a little bit of, as we became more and more aware of how pervasive and the impact of ADHD in our society, all of a sudden it became kind of a punchline. Like I go to the store, I forget one of the things on my list and it's like, oh, it's my ADHD. You know, people were kind of claiming it as an excuse for every little piece of distraction or forgetfulness. And it really trivializes just how impactful that condition is. I wonder if there's an analogy here that that we're all claiming food noise is the thing that is getting in our way and not really understanding what you've just described, the impact and the pervasiveness, the intensity of this. We're not all experiencing this the same way.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's such a double-edged sword, right? The phenomenon needs people to understand it, to really have legs, to really get into treatment and all of that. And people that don't really probably can't even picture what that feels like. It, to me, it's the most obvious in when people who have experienced a reduction, it is like with noise. I think of it almost as that, you know, when you're sitting on your back porch and you hear the air conditioning unit, you don't notice when it's on, but when it shuts off, you're like, God, that was so annoying. How could I have been sitting out here listening to it? But when people see a reduction in that food noise, they describe feeling free. They feel like, oh, this is what normal might feel like to other people. It's not feeling controlled by something. And then I think really for us as dietitians and behavior folks, really that the ability to stick to the stuff that they logically know that they have a lot of education about, and they just are able to do that stuff in a much more, you know, consistent and long-term way. I think that's what's so exciting about it for me.
Right. So in an effort to gather some more data on this sort of emerging phenomenon, the Weight Watchers company teamed up a few months ago with the Stop Obesity Alliance, which is a pretty serious research and advocacy organization out of Georgetown, and surveyed over 1,000 consumers and about A quarter of the folks in this survey group were considered normal weight. Another quarter of them had a BMI that put them in the category of overweight. And almost half of them had a BMI that put them in the obese category. And I just want to caveat that with all the usual caveats about the limitations of BMI as a designator, but it does make surveys like this possible. So what they found was that not only were those who were living with obesity much more likely to report experiencing a high level of food noise than those who weren't, but just as you're describing, it also appeared to be a really significant barrier to their ability to make the kind of behavioral changes necessary to achieve weight loss. So I think what this has done is given us some research support, some data to put behind the anecdotal reports that you have heard, that I have heard about this. But what does this tell us about this condition, this disease of obesity, and perhaps its relationship to, say, willpower?
Oh, so much there. Well, I think, you know, for me, the first part is seeing that, you know, close to 60% of people reported experiencing that food noise was big. But the interesting part also is that 12% only were familiar with the term prior to the survey. So I thought that, you know, to me, that's so part of this, where it's this condition that people, when they have it, often feel like it's their fault. I mean, to a big extent, that really overlays with the bias and stigma. Like, I have this, it's my fault, and I alone should be responsible for treating and managing it. Even though, you know, those of us working in the field, we know that comprehensive obesity care is anything but the person's fault. It's all about, you know, all these other, you know, components. But the fact that people are experiencing this, they don't know that they have it, and that there is some hope for reducing that, again, leading into their ability to stick to the nutrition, the fitness, that, you know, the movement, all of that stuff that they probably have had pretty good education about. I think that really reminds us that it's not just a lack of knowing what to do. It's not just a lack of being able to do it, but it's really biological. And it's really something that when you, you know, play around with the brain chemistry, you can see how much it does reside. It's not just a lazy inability to do what we all, quote, should be doing.
If you want to see real change, you need to be consistent, and hair care is no exception. Vegamore makes sticking to your hair care routine easy so that you can actually see the results you've always wanted. With a monthly subscription of their Grow Hair Serum, you'll never run low on the products that you need, plus it saves you money. For best results, you want to use this for at least 3 months to see visibly fuller, healthier, and thicker looking hair. I'm only on month 2, but the routine is super simple, and I like the way my hair is looking. I also appreciate that Vegamore products are free of harsh chemicals and are also 100% cruelty-free. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore, and for a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/diva. And then use the code DIVA at checkout. That's VEGAMOUR.com/DIVA and the code DIVA to save 20% on your first order.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Here's to the best spring ever in this season's must-have shoes. Find all the styles you need from brands you love at amazing prices right now at DSW. Update your closet with colorful sandals made for sunny days, fresh sneakers perfect for spring looks, and sporty soles ready for new adventures. Whatever you're up to this spring, DSW has the exact right pair for the occasion. Shop must-have spring shoes at your DSW store and DSW.com.
Right. And, you know, behavior change and adopting healthy lifestyle habits, you know, it takes effort for everybody. It's like riding a bike up a hill. But if you have this phenomenon at work in your brain, it's like riding up that same hill in a terrible headwind. And, you know, this, I think, is an important insight. But there was another piece to this survey, because of those 1,000 consumers that were kind of divided among these different categories of weight category, about a third of them were also taking one of these GLP-1 agonists. And it turned out that those who were on those medications, it was having a pretty profound effect on this phenomenon of food noise. They were finding it much easier to make healthier food choices and stick to the eating plan that was then allowing them to lose weight.
You know, it's almost the way that we're talking about this too. It's reminding me that, you know, when we talk about medication, there's a lot of stigma that people face going on a medication. Oh, that's the easy way out, right? But even in just the way you said that, easier to follow these plans, it's not just the easy way out. It's the easy way to break that barrier to do the hard work that they either know about and they've not been able to enact, or that they need to know. And to me, this also highlights the real important role of the behavioral team of experts who help people on these medications to get to that step. So it's not, we've really got a lot of work to do, I think, publicly on, it's not just the medication, the whole comprehensive care team is involved. It's not just take this and you're going to be skinny. And that is what sometimes gets put out there publicly. But I almost think this food noise is like that mediating variable, that thing that connects taking a medication that helps your biology, but that makes it easier to do the behavioral things that it takes to keep the weight off long term. And to me, you know, again, working in bariatrics, coming up on, you know, 2 decades of that, patients who've had bariatric surgery have had that experience. When you're rearranging their anatomy through a surgical procedure, they experience a reduction in the same, you know, in food cravings and thoughts about food. I have a patient friend and colleague who sits on the Obesity Action Coalition with me, and she and I were talking at a meeting recently, and she talked about her story. So I asked her if she'd let me talk about this. So thank you, Nikki Massey. But I'm going to read her her response, because I thought she described it in such a personal and eloquent way that just really hit home for me. So she said, basically, when I first had bariatric surgery in 2008, food noise wasn't really a term. I just knew that after surgery, my ability to eat was greatly diminished, but that didn't stop the incessant thoughts about food. I remember I used to think about food even from the moment I took my last bite of a meal, wondering when I would be hungry again so I could eat some more. On my blog, I used to joke that food sung to me in the voice of Harry Belafonte. I'm so grateful for the conversations around food noise with regard to the GLP-1s, because it's made this phenomenon more well-known and discussed. My mental health was greatly affected by food noise, and I seriously thought that something was just very wrong with me. It's something I still battle, although these days I have the ability to eat more substantially, so there isn't such a chasm between what I'm able to eat and what I think I'm supposed to be able to eat.
Right. Right. That is beautifully put. And thank you, Nikki, for sharing your experience with us. But, you know, I think this opens up this question about how exactly are these medications having this effect? So there are a lot of different mechanisms by which these GLP medications are thought to promote weight loss. And in the beginning, a lot of the focus was on some of the activity in the gut. So they mimic the effects of GLP-1, which is a hormone that is also released in the gut when you eat and decreases the desire to continue eating. So I'm way oversimplifying this, but this is the sort of I've had enough hormone. Mm-hmm. But there were other activities too. The drugs were also slowing down the rate at which food leaves the stomach. And that might mean that it takes longer after a meal before you start to feel hungry again. But I feel like this whole thing about food noise is pointing in a different direction, less about what's going on in the gut and more about what's going on in the brain. And GLP is not active only in the gut, right? It is also active in the brain. So there's, I think that these medications are in their mechanisms, maybe more complex than even the developers of these medications realized.
They do influence the gut hormones that signal fullness to the brain. So that part is really, that is important. And that's that kind of gut brain connection. And so you do see a reduction in food cravings and a reduction in that overall caloric intake. And so that appetite piece, I think that's really important, you know, because a lot of times people say, I just am not full. I just feel right. like I can continue to eat. So it has that component. It also can influence the brain regions that are involved in reward seeking behaviors mm-hmm. and motivation. So it kind of makes the unhealthier, you know, again, in quotes for food choices, they seem less appealing. So those pathways are important. And I think it's also shown that there's positive impact on even drinking alcohol.
Yes.
So some of the neurotransmitters that are in the, you know, amygdala and the, you know, different parts of the brain that are involved in addictive behaviors, they can share some of those pathways with eating behaviors, and seeing an impact on that to me is really important. And it's going to be helpful for people who struggle with that as well. But it also shows you that, you know, I think there's a desire to maybe understand exactly how these work, but also that these unintended positive side effects can really be helpful. And it's not an either or. There's so many times in obesity, we want, what is the reason for it? And mm-hmm. what is the reason out of it? And it's black and white and it's all or nothing. And really here we're seeing, wow, there's a range. There's a range of how it can work. And I'd imagine that for some people, they may see more impact in one area than the other. But I also think there's a point to say they're not as effective for every single person equally. So if you're somebody who's
like taking, any drug, right?
Right. Like, what if you're taking this and, you know, we've talked up so much, these are the, you know, the answer, the game changers and all of that. But like, what if you're the person who's taking it and you're not responding mm-hmm. the same way? I think there's also a piece to that that makes it complicated. And so I think there's a lot here, a lot of the brain part, the gut part, they can kind of work in tandem. But yeah, I think that for sure the food noise component that we're talking about here does have that brain component. And I think that's, you know, what takes it again above and beyond just eating less, just moving more, just educating. It's really having a systemic effect on the whole person.
Well, you bring up a good point, and that is not everyone has the same experience on this medication, experiences the same effects. Some people may have the experience, but find the side effects intolerable and not be able to continue taking the medication, even though they may have appreciated those benefits. They find that they just can't tolerate the side effects. There are people who are having difficulty getting access to them in the first place. They are very expensive. So this is not a panacea. It's not a blanket we can throw over the whole problem. There are all kinds of reasons why people may choose not to, may not be able to take advantage of this. But we've had some interesting conversations about the potential value of people who may not be able to tolerate them long-term, but still might get a short-term benefit or boost in having the volume on that food noise turned down even temporarily.
Yeah, the timing is a piece of it. I think there's a lot of conversations about, are they really intended to be taken long-term and forever? Mm-hmm. And so the first component of that is, you know, when we're talking about a chronic disease, we do want to promote, you know, the idea, just like with high blood pressure, that if your blood pressure is high and you've, you know, attempted to work on your diet and you need to take medication, there's not a shame in that, but you might be on one medication for a time. Sometimes you might need two, but really you're not ever being told by your team, let's get off of them completely. Now your blood pressure is good, but let's get off of all the meds. We would just never do that. So I think there's part of this in that education of teaching people that it is a chronic relapsing condition that should be treated that way, just like other medications. But there also is this, with any chronic condition, there's trial and error. There's experiments. We want to try something and see if it works. There's side effects. There's costs, there's insurance, there's all of this nuanced layers to, is this the treatment that you're going to be on? And I don't think we should have to say someone's going to be on this treatment, this one and only treatment for the rest of their life. So it's, to me, always coming back to, it's alongside the nutrition behavior intervention. It's this comprehensive approach. And it does need to be, you know, worked on with a team, you know, a medical team that can help you say, let's try it. But that break that you mentioned is important. So for someone who's experienced high volume food noise, even a period of time where they're able to say, turn that down, work on those goals and plans that they've, you know, been wanting to get back to, that can sort of kickstart motivation in a different way. And if that medication is pulled back, you might see, okay, maybe you're able to stay off of it and continue those behaviors. Maybe you're only able to do that for a short period of time and then you get back on that or something else. So it's, again, it's back to really this, it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. And while I appreciate the attention and the media and all of the, you know, after 20 years in this field, we're finally having media coverage with commercials during the Oscars where we're talking about not shaming treatment approaches to a chronic disease. That is so good on so many levels for the public to hear that message, but it also makes it something that's on the news in sound bites, in snippets. And there's no way to stuff the conversations that need to happen between clinicians and their patients and, you know, all of that. There's no way to distill that down into a few snippets. And so you kind of ride that line between there's so much there that needs to be done in that individual patient to provider connection and work on your own. But also that we're hearing simplified messages over and over. Just get on this med. It's going to change your life. It's going to change your weight. You're not going to have to do all that much. It's just melting off of you. I mean, all of those messages, I think, can be quite damaging, especially to somebody who's not able to access the medication for all the reasons that you mentioned.
Right. And even for those who are, of course, as you've emphasized a few times, it does not replace all of the other behavioral work, the lifestyle modification, the setting up supportive environment that supports you in the habits. All of that still needs to happen. But perhaps we can close. Having investigated a little bit this phenomenon of food noise, what it might be like, where it comes from, and the fact that it may occur on a spectrum of intensity and volume for different people. Do you have some ideas about behavioral strategies that we can use to turn down the volume on those kinds of thoughts so that we can all achieve a greater degree of peace with or without the support of a medication? How can we help turn down the volume on food noise?
So I think a lot of this comes back to almost investigating the hunger and the appetite and the cues around us. I know you talk a lot about this, you know, but thinking about, you know, I really want to remind folks that suppressing your appetite or making the food noise go away completely is not the goal, right? We need our appetite. We need some reminders to eat. It's not going to be a good thing if someone never is prompted to eat by their physiology or even their environment around them, because then you could go all day without eating and that's not a good strategy.
And right? It's also not the goal to set up a situation where we get no joy or pleasure from food.
Yes. And so I think sort of looking at that, you know, how do you honor your hunger? How do you respond to your appetite? Reminding, you know, folks and working with folks to get those components, you know, as to me, I look at that as you may not be on this medication forever, but while you're on it, let's get those building blocks practiced. Let's get that into your routine. Let's really work on that so that if things change in the future, we never know, you know, that those are part of the behavior. And, you know, that you've repeated that over and over again so that it's something that you feel confident doing and then you can do that more. I also think, you know, managing stress is going to be a big piece of all of this because those, you know, anytime we're having physiological stress, right, those automatic thoughts that we have can kind of kick in and we default to that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, without thinking about it, what are the go-to strategies that you use? And can we practice those again so that that behavior chain and that, you know, series of things that we do is working in a positive direction
I want to just put in a plug here for a concept I teach in some of my programs called pre-covery, which is stress management techniques are really important, but we need to practice them in a prophylactic way, not as a response to an emergency, but on an ongoing basis, kind of pre-covering, laying the groundwork so that we are a little bit more resilient and have more resources to draw on when we find ourselves under stress.
I love that. I think that's something we could use in eating and also at work and at home, and really just, you know, we do that kind of, I think that automatic thought pattern for me is like the hopes and dreams, right? Like, oh, well, this isn't an ideal state. This is how it's going to be. You know, oh, when you think about the future perfect state, you don't think about the reality that you've experienced time and time again. And so, well, how did that work in the past? That's probably how it might, you know, be in the future. But being a realist in that regard, I think, is important. And then the other big one for me is really, again, thinking about proactively managing the nutrition part of, you know, getting in your protein, getting in your fiber, eating the foods that we know are more filling and nutritious, so that you're not in a state of, oh, too hungry physiologically, whether or not you have food noise or not, is going to cause you to have more intrusive thoughts about the things that are not on your plan.
Sure.
Right. So there's sort of part of this, well, how do you balance planning and balancing your diet with, you know, not overdoing it? And I think that's where the help of a, you know, dietitian or a behavioral coach, someone in that category, can really help. It's again, not the goal to just suppress the food noise, eat nothing, drop the weight, and then life's going to be in this perfect state. It's how do you take all the things that we know to be challenges, troubleshoot them, make plans for them, get your biology in order to match your behavioral goals, and then you can focus on all the other stuff. Yeah, the enjoyment of food. If you're not thinking about it all the time, when you do have the thing that is tasty and delicious, can you actually enjoy it without the guilt and the other sort of thoughts that come after it?
Yeah, I think it's a real balance of kind of internal work on being more mindful and aware of our cues and our triggers and our needs and our thoughts, with what I think of as more external work, you know, what I mentioned before, setting up a supportive environment, doing some planning, putting some structure into place so you're not making all the decisions at the last minute. You know, it is a lot of plates to spin, but this is the job of being an adult. and I think it does offer hope for folks who may or may not be considering, may or may not be eligible or interested in a pharmacological support on this, that there is still a lot that we can do with our brains and with our lifestyle and with the support of a supportive team to take control and to gain control over these aspects of our lives. But I always so appreciate the perspective that you bring to this, and the insight that you bring to these complicated questions. I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. I think there's so much nuance in this that you and I could talk about this all weekend, which we should do sometime.
we've done it before. Well, I hope you'll come back soon. I just have a quick reminder to our listeners that we have our Stronger Bones workshop coming up with me and physical therapist Joanne Fagerstrom. That's on April 13th. And if you'd like some more information about that, you'll find it at nutritionovereasy.com/healthybones. And just a quick thank you to my team at Quick and Dirty Tips. That includes Brandon Getches, Nathan Sems, Davina Tomlin, Holly Hutchings, Morgan Christensen, and Cameron Lacey, all of whom make this podcast possible. Thanks to all of them, and thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.